The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 422, recorded on April 25th, 2016. Welcome to the 422nd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast, the 255th edition of the Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Durf.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. And I'm barking. So anyway, I saw this this video online from IGN. And, TJ, it talked about how people should really check out the multiplayer mode because it's goofy and fun.
In what?
In Dark Souls 3.
Oh, yeah.
He says it's goofy and fun, and it makes the game less hard and more wacky.
I would agree. It also invites a certain sense of chaos to it.
So, what exactly happens in multiplayer?
Well, multiplayer is just kind of, unless you're playing offline, multiplayer is just always kind of going in Dark Souls. You can be invaded randomly, and you can invade others. Depending on the covenant that you're with, it can happen automatically, or you can choose to, like, use a couple items to either invade or invite other players into your world. Once you're in another person's world or someone's invaded your world, either of you can use other items to then bring other phantoms. And, like, phantom is any character that's in a world that's not their own. Right. And there's blue phantoms that will help you, red phantoms that will attack you, and then purple phantoms, which can attack enemies, like other enemies in the area, and you.
Okay.
So, all of the, like, you can just start out basically at, like, just one enemy, a phantom in your world, or friendly, but it can invite, but they can invite so many phantoms, and before you know it, you're going through this long trail of killing each other off and trying to get through. And it's a fun addition, but it can also be super frustrated if, like, you get randomly invaded.
So aside from Dark Souls 3, what have you been playing?
They recently released a demo for Guilty Gear XRD.
I thought you were going to say the other demo.
What's that?
Oh, the Final Fantasy 15 demo or something.
Oh, no, I could care less.
Same here.
If you pre-ordered the Guilty Gear XRD, Revelator is going to be coming out in, I think, June. And if you pre-ordered it, you could download a demo of the game active at the beginning of April. And I've been playing around on that because it's got some new characters in it that I really love. I love the fighting game scene, and I really particularly love Guilty Gear. So I've been digging into that and seeing if I can learn a few new tricks.
How about you, Scott?
I've been playing this game I got off of Steam, anniversary, Legend of K Anniversary. And it's this little world where there's cat ninjas, or at least, you know, some sort of cat warriors. And their character is a cat of this cat clan, and they lived in this, like, peaceful area until these monkey or ape and rat people invaded and took over the place. It kind of has a Jade Empire feel a little bit, and the voice acting, though, is really bad. I had seen a review warning me of that, but the combat is fun, and you're going around collecting coins and whatnot, and you have you get a sword and you get some tools like bombs and potions, and the music's nice, and that's what I've been playing right now.
I've been playing Find Yourself a Job Game. It's virtual reality to the max.
You
need glasses for it. I'll tell you, it still makes you sick and dizzy.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you nauseous, in fact. I've started a small little game called Letter Quest on the iPad because I saw it on the Xbox One. I said, I'll try it on the iPad because it's free. And it's basically Bookworm Adventures. A little more random than Bookworm Adventures. But, it does get my letter-making freak on. My word-making freak on. So there's that. Some interesting news, which I did not post in the notes because it's not big enough, but they did announce the Gears of War 4 release date and the Collector's Edition. And one thing I noted is that the people who order the Collector's Edition will get to play it 4 days early. And I'm thinking, EA struck on a chord here with their access because, in EA Access, if you subscribe $30 a year, you get to play full versions of the games a couple of days early, 5 days early for free. And I think this is the new thing. Instead of doing demos, you get to let people play the full game and then decide if they want to buy it or not. And any achievements and any saves they have stay. I think that's a win for the customer, because I'd rather do that than do a demo, because demos can sometimes lie. For those of you who don't know, you actually have to develop the demo. It's not like you take a chunk out of the game and put it. No, you actually have to develop that demo. It's a separate game unto itself. So, really they did that in the early 90s, Remember Doom and Castle Wolfenstein? They would just go to a certain level, and if you wanted to continue, well, pay up, But this I like. You get to play the full game and see if you want to play it or not. Let's discuss that development that's shockingly pro-player by publishers.
So on that, because I had a question on that Dark Souls 3 multiplayer, you were just saying how people can invade your world and all they can they do is like they can kill you like you're saying, but can they like take your stuff or?
The main reason to do any sort of invasion in Dark Souls 3 is that it applies to... Well, first off, if you invade someone's world and kill them, you can get an item called Embers, and what that does is it extends your health bar until you die again. And not only that, it allows you to see summon signs that allows you to invite like either other players or NPCs into your world to help you with certain areas.
So, the other thing I was going to bring up is that, and I know we're going to bring it up at some point, so we might as well bring it up now, and that is, I was actually kind of surprised, that Civil War was going to be next week.
Mm-hmm.
I am totally not looking, actually this week, I'm sorry, it officially opens on April 29th, although I don't know where, because I keep seeing April 29th in some places and May 2nd in other places. So I don't know what the deal is, but this week, this coming weekend, I don't care, but I know that a couple of Marvel Universe fanatics might actually have some interest in it, because there's the Spider-Man, and you have people fighting, and it's actually fun, and it's not dark and depressing like Batman versus Superman.
It's also building up towards the Infinity Gauntlet War.
Yeah. That's the only problem I have, is that everything's, there's one thing that most reviews have noticed that's kind of toothless, because that nothing bad can really happen because there's another movie coming up that requires these characters. Maybe not Captain America, since he was shot to death in the actual comic.
Yeah, well, not everything needs to be Game of Thrones or someone dying.
Yeah, but there has to be some sort of stakes.
Yeah.
The only stakes that people will have is, will Spider-Man be a part of the Infinity War? Because he wasn't in the comic. Everybody was in the Infinity War in one way or another, but I just mean actually going after Thanos.
Thanos killed most of them in the comic book, so I don't really have high hopes for a lot of these characters.
I'm guessing,
he got killed off pretty quick.
I'm guessing you'll have Guardians of the Galaxy joining in.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And since they're splitting up Infinity War into two movies. So there's that. I don't know. I thought... I don't know. It's... I'm tired of cinematic universes, you know. I just not. Like a single story, you know. Like if DC was to do Kingdom Come, I don't want them to do the Kingdom afterwards, you know. Kingdom Come is a perfectly good standalone movie. Although considering the length of the comic, I'm pretty sure they'd split it up into two parts. You know?
I'm enjoying this build up. I don't think they've done this like at all in movies where they just build up.
Was there any build up to Avengers: Age of Ultron? Because that was a flat line.
I thought I enjoyed it. I'm sorry.
You may have enjoyed it, but it was a flat line.
I don't know what you mean by that.
It means it was okay. Things are happening on the screen. It's over. That was okay. What's next?
Wow, that's pessimistic.
That's not pessimistic. I was just
bored. Yeah, it is. That's cynical as hell. Damn, do you enjoy anything?
Of course I do. I just enjoy things that excite
movie.
Me.
We enjoy that. I don't. Whatever.
I mean, look. The Avengers excited me. Avengers: Age of Ultron did not excite me. Iron Man 3 didn't excite me.
You actually had someone die in Age of Ultron. Didn't Silver, whatever the hell is Quicksilver, die in that one?
Yeah, he'll be back. Don't worry. That's one problem I have with comics as a general, because it used to be there's three people who are never coming back: Barry Allen, Bucky Barnes, and Jason Todd. All three of them have come back. Although in Barry Allen's case, it made a lot more sense than either Bucky or
some people stay dead, like Batman's parents, Uncle Ben.
Yeah, those aren't superheroes.
No, that's true.
Those are women in fridge or men in fridge. Their deaths just to serve to motivate the hero.
Yeah.
You know what I like is that sometimes Jonathan and Martha Kent are alive, sometimes they're not. Sometimes only Martha is alive. They flip around on Superman's parents, human parents. Although Jor-El and Kara all die, of course.
Oh man, now I'm trying to remember if there's ever been like a popular hero that has ever died in comics and remained dead forever.
No, I was about to say Captain Marvel, but he's coming back to life and dying again. Ted Kord has stayed dead. Now, he's come back in alternate realities, but for the most part, he's stayed dead, and Dan Garrett certainly has, so at least the Blue Beetle, they stay dead. let's see. Who has stayed dead as comic book characters?
I think that's the part of the problem. When you say popular, then they want to keep this character alive.
They've
done it on
money.
TV, too, where they got a character that they wanted to kill. They wanted to kill Barnabas on Dark Shadows. They wanted to kill Spike. They wanted to kill Skylar. But then they said, oh, no, they're too popular. We've got to keep them around.
Well,
so they
Spike is
around.
Interesting, at least. I mean, he does have... See, of all the characters in the Buffyverse, Spike is the most interesting because he has character development. Well, Angel, too. But, you know, Buffy... You know, the only time she became interesting was when she was able to be hurt by Spike because she was no longer human. Dawn was a way to get a new character in without being Cousin Oliver-y about it, although they didn't reference Cousin Oliver. But people who stayed dead... No, I can't say Firestorm because fucking Ronnie came back. The problem is Blackest Night resurrected a lot of people because Green Lantern, Hal Jordan was dead, or at least he was the Spectre, but they resurrected them. There are some people who were not resurrected by Blackest Night. Then again, right after Blackest Night, they rebooted into New 52.
Yeah.
Oh, but, you know, some people still stayed dead afterward, though. I don't know. Hey, you know, at least... the original Kara, what's it called, Supergirl, has stayed dead. The other Supergirls are not her. But that's the problem, is that you still have the same uniform. I mean, even with the Blue Beetle, you have Jaime Reyes, who is the Blue Beetle now. I don't know. You know, every time here's the thing. Maybe Jason Todd stayed dead, or remained dead, because everything that happens after post-crisis doesn't count for that. Because that was just a gigantic reboot. So, yeah, Jason Todd did stay dead. It's just in the reboots he mysteriously came back alive again. Any way you want to call it, whether it was Ra's al Ghul's pool or the other way. I forgot the way. What was the other way? I know that they retconned it in that Ra's al Ghul saved him. But what was the original way that he came back? Do you remember? Because it wasn't Ra's al Ghul originally. That was just done for Under the Red Hood. Oh, wow. So this is the comic reference part of the program, folks. So let's see. We have Civil War, and then we have another Marvel movie coming out as well in the same year. What is it? I'm trying to remember. Is it... By the way, they're saying Civil War is more of an Iron Man movie than it is a Captain America movie, which makes sense.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Iron Man is basically the provocateur of the entire thing. Shoot, there is another Marvel movie coming out
actually,
this year.
Actually, it sounds like... I guess you could, we could argue about who's the antagonist and who's the protagonist.
Well, according to Marvel, the pro-registration were in the right side, which is absolute bullshit. Because the entire series was showing pro-registration as bad, 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 bad. Oh, by the way, they were good, after all. Actually, you know, the entire Civil War was shit. I hated Civil War because it led to One More Day. Anything that led to One More Day can't be all that good. It was the direct motivation for One More Day. Because, remember, Peter Parker decided to reveal that he was Spider-Man, which led to someone trying to assassinate either him or Mary Jane, and instead shooting his elderly mother, you know, and then he decides he'd rather have his 98-year-old mother, Aunt May, he'd rather have 98-year-old Aunt May live maybe another year or two than have his wife and just retcon his entire marriage away. And oh, by the way, goodbye Spider-Girl, because that wiped away Spider-Girl.
Hmm.
Because, of course, you know, according to Joe Quesada, there's no way unmarried people could ever have a child. And he didn't want to have divorce. You know, that's why instead of the divorce, it was much less evil to have Peter make a deal with a devil. You can't have divorce. Not a comic. No, you have to have him make a deal with a satanic creature. That's more wholesome.
So you can have all this violence, all this, what's it called, fan service, but you can't have somebody have a divorce? That just seems strange.
Well, the thing is that Joe Quesada thinks that, that what's it called, Peter's better when he's a swinging single teenager, which may be true, but, you know, they could have... Here's the thing, you know, they did have Ben Reilly, and they did have the clone, and they were going to write Peter Parker out and then focus on Ben Reilly. But here's the thing, you know, people are upset, you can't do that. Well, why not? Let Peter Parker and Mary Jane get married and have children, have Spider-Girl, and let us focus on Ben Reilly. So, you know, the swinging single Ben Reilly, so what if it's a different name? Who cares?
It's, you know? I like to quote Wesley from Princess Bride. It's the name that matters, you know, it doesn't matter who's wearing the mask of Pirate Roberts.
So yeah, revealed that it was that Ben Reilly is actually Peter Parker, and Peter Parker was actually Ben Reilly, and they got switched up, and now what's it called? Ben Reilly's going to marry Mary Jane and have kids, and Peter Parker is going to swing around and all that stuff. And by the way, they wanted him to be swinging single, but one issue later, his new girlfriend is Carrot. Wait, what was her name again? All I know is she's named after Joe Quesada's daughter. So Joe Quesada had Peter Parker break up his marriage and have a deal with the devil with Mary Jane so that he could marry his, so that he could date his daughter.
That's weird. That's another thing that annoys me about a lot of writing, not just with comics, but in TV as well. They just seem to be really chicken shit scared to write about a married couple, you know, and their struggles that they have to go through.
That's because married couples require maturity and require responsibility and require, you know, you have a commitment to something and you just can't do whatever you want because you actually have a family. People can't handle that. They want them to be reckless and stupid.
Well, I thought, like, at least one good example of a married couple that I thought was written well was in Scrubs, Turk and Carla, because they go through the whole progression from being single to starting to date, moving in, to, you know, just going the whole storyline that you could do with a married couple, and I thought that was really good. And,
you see, like, the problem is that when Rhoda got married, suddenly they didn't have Rhoda anymore as she was, so she had to be pushed off to her side so that her friend, played by Julie Kavner, who we all know as Marge Simpson, I forgot her character's name, would be the central focus because she was neurotic and single. So they got the wrong message from that. They didn't know how to write married. You know, although the, you know, you could say, well, I Dream of Jeannie and Bewitched, you know, they were a happily married couple.
What's Rhoda from?
Rhoda. Oh yeah, that was from Mary Tyler Moore. She spun off from Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah, I was talking about Scrubs.
I know, but I'm talking about I'm talking about other married couples. I'm saying the reason why you seldom see married couples in sitcoms or any shows anymore is because happy people don't make history, you know. And when Rhoda get married, suddenly her character wasn't as funny anymore because she wasn't desperate and looking for a man. You know, so they had, and then that just waves down. You know, that's why they have this belief that you can't write for married couples, which is absolutely untrue. You could.
I think Monica and Chandler would have been a much better spinoff than Joey, for example. I mean, you got freaking wisecracking Chandler, and you know, you had that whole unexpected chemistry that happened between him and the Courtney Cox character, Monica, and that was really good. And a lot of people wanted to follow that. And when they went with Joey, that just pissed a lot of fans off.
You know, you could always look at Frasier. Now, that of course, awesome. Frasier is a Frasier himself is the Gilligan's Island of romance. But
yeah.
Niles and Daphne did get married, and they remained happily married from the 8th season to the 11th. So they had 3 full seasons of getting married, and the only reason why that show ended is because they wanted to end it on, you know, because it was getting old.
Yeah.
And they ended it on them having a kid. But they could have continued having a kid as well, because you had Frederick and Frasier.
Jim and Pam even got married, like, 3rd or 4th season, I think, of The Office. You know, people act like it took forever, but it really didn't take that long, because first season was, like, 6 episodes or something, or at least half a season. And then, he goes through the whole unrequited love during the 2nd, and then finally they date during the 3rd, and it was like I think after the 4th or something.
You know whose marriage worked in comics? Superman and Lois.
Yeah.
Until New 52, when they decided, you know, Superman should only date other superheroes because they're both powerful, completely missing the point of Superman's character.
Yeah.
You know, the only reason why he dated Wonder Woman in Kingdom Come, and Mark Waid said this, was that Wonder Woman was a distant second to Lois. And the thing is that when Lois and Clark, Superman and Lois and Clark, the 8-issue miniseries that's out, which I highly recommend you read, even though it's on number 7 right now, brought Clark and Lois back, and they showed what kind of married couple they were. They worked, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, Superman being with Wonder Woman is just one huge cop-out, because, you know, what's so interesting about that, you know? I mean, Superman, for one thing, would not want to date another superhero because he wants to feel like a human being. You know, he does not feel like a Titan. That's the one thing they get wrong, especially, hey, that's one of the things in Batman and Superman that makes no sense, is that Superman is, he doesn't want to save people.
That is stupid.
You know, and his mother says, you don't owe this world a thing, so fuck them. You don't care about, you don't have to care about Earthlings. They mean nothing to you. Thank you, Ma Kent.
It's really funny, and even in Injustice, Gods Among Us, when Superman, when Lois Lane dies and Superman goes crazy and turns his back on being human, even then, like Wonder Woman makes a try at him and tries to sort of fill that gap, and he won't let it happen.
Well, here's the thing: is that the sequel to What's So Funny About the Truth, Justice in the American Way, which is about, of course, Manchester Black. You can see Superman vs. the Elite is based on the comic. They had a sequel in Manchester Black made it look like Lois was killed because he was trying to provoke Superman into becoming a murderer, and it didn't work, you know.
Yeah.
And in Kingdom Come, Superman Joker murdered Lois there, and Superman just brought him into custody, you know. He did not go into a blind rage. What made him leave humanity was that when Magog came and killed the Joker, everybody sided with Magog, and Superman didn't want to live in a world with 90s antiheroes. He didn't want to be in a world where the public wanted heroes who killed, you know, and that's why he left. So, I mean, there are extreme cases, like I said, you know, you have the Justice Lords, you know, in which Superman basically turns Lex Luthor into back bacon.
Yeah.
You know.
And I mean, the fact of the matter is that it also depends upon the writer, but also whoever wrote Batman versus Superman was a bad writer.
David S. Goyer. I thought that was Zack Snyder
for the movie.
No. Well, Zack Snyder's the director. The writer was David S. Goyer. And, you know, I know a lot of people are looking forward to the Batman movie because Ben Affleck actually made a decent Batman, even though it was written completely wrong. You know? But I will say one thing, and we're going to get into the video games right after this, folks, is that it's worrisome that they had to do all those reshoots of Suicide Squad. Now, film reshoots are common, you know? But DC saw that people loved the humor in the trailers. The only problem was that all the humor in the movies were all in the trailers. According to the director, he said it was going to be... He was bragging a couple of months ago that it was really dark and gritty and dismal and really moody and emo. You know, he was really getting off on that. You know, he said that was really... This is going to be so dark you wouldn't believe it. And then the humor in the trailer... Warner Brothers says, you know what, you're going to have to stick some humor in here. Put more humor in. I mean, how can you not have humor? You have friggin' Harley Quinn. You know, you have to have humor if you have Harley Quinn in the film.
I guess it depends on the humor. I think people would want dark humor, not goofy humor.
Yeah, but still, no, well, see, that's just the thing, is Harley is goofy. Mm. She's evil and violent and sadistic, but she's also goofy about it.
Yeah.
You know, she's here's the thing, you know, the Joker can be malevolent and evil and just tear into your skin, you know, and laugh about it. But it's sort of like a Dr. Gill situation. Harley is contrasted with the Joker. She's goofy and, you know, she's like, "Hi, Mr. J," you know, that sort of thing, you know, and she'll be a Cupid doll before she takes a mallet and bashes your head in. Mm-hmm. You know, so you really have to be a little bit more lightheaded. And also there's Will Smith. And, you know, I'm going to say something. When Will Smith is dour and serious, it's a boring friggin' movie.
Yeah.
You got to have lighthearted Will Smith, not dark. Could you imagine a dour Will Smith in Independence Day? It would be unwatchable.
I would say the Joker is pretty much the same way. Like, even like Heath Ledger's Joker, which was arguably one of the darkest Jokers.
Did you read Joker by Brian Azzarello?
Well, whatever you want to call it. But Heath Ledger's Joker, like, even when that dude was doing abhorrent things, there were still scenes like you watch him jam a pencil into a dude's head, but it's like in such a just jocular, weird way that you don't even think about the fact that he just murdered that dude.
You know, I find myself preferring Cesar Romero's Joker, just so you know.
I think referencing what you just said, TJ, that's definitely dark humor because you find it funny, but it's like you almost feel bad for finding it funny because, oh my god, he just killed a guy, but he did it in a funny way.
You know, I was surprised at how evil they could make Cesar Romero's Joker in the Batman TV series.
Yeah.
Without even realizing it. When you watch it with human eyes, you're saying, oh, wait a minute. I mean, he was still sort of like a proto-Jack Nicholson, you know, but he was doing some horrible stuff. You know, and I grew up with Jack Nicholson's Joker.
Did you ever watch Batman the Brave and the Bold?
Oh, yes. And they have a lot of self-referential stuff, too. It was supposed to end with Batmite, but it didn't.
I heard a lot of people say that like that Joker and the Batman the Brave and the Bold was a lot more aligned with like the personalities and quirks of Cesar Romero's Joker.
Well, yeah, I mean the entire thing was just a humorous take, although it did get dead serious at some points, you know, without you realizing it, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like I said, if you ever get the trade paperback version of Whatever Happened to the Caped Crusader, which was basically the Batman version of Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, in which Batman is dying. There's a story right after it called When Is a Door, and it talks to the Riddler, and he starts complaining that, you know, it used to be fun. You know, we used to have Eggman and King Tut and all that, and now everybody's killing everybody. When did the Joker become a murderer? Did someone change the script on me while I wasn't watching? And he's basically talking about how everything's become dark and gritty, and there's something lost there. You know, you have to have some levity. I mean, try to make a realistic superhero movie to me, like, and now this is why I don't like the Christopher Nolan movies, is like try to make a realistic Mario. Could you imagine someone... Oh, we saw... And I'm not talking about... Hoskins. I'm talking about a real... Can you imagine a fat, greasy Italian plumber who jumps up and down and crushes turtles underneath his feet? Yeah, well, that's not a pretty picture.
I either think of Bob Hoskins or I think of Captain Lou Albano.
See, but those are just living cartoons. I'm talking about imagine Christopher Nolan's Super Mario Brothers. See, that's how I feel. You know, I mean,
almost have to just make it a cartoon. I don't think you could make it live action.
Make it a living cartoon. You can have the fantasy, and have it grounded in reality. But the reality that has to be grounded are the personalities and the dialogue. It doesn't have to be the action. We have something called willing suspension of disbelief. And I'm going to tell you something. The more realistic you try to make Batman, the more disbelief I have. You know. Because there are things that happen in the Batman movies of the Christopher Nolan that's like, no, that wouldn't work in real life. And I shouldn't be saying that in a Batman movie, you know. I'm going to say it again, the best Batman movie, and you'll probably agree with me, is Mask of the Phantasm. Because it's it has fantasy, and yet the characters are grounded, you know. And it's the characters who have to be grounded, not the action, and not the reality.
I guess, you know, I'd have to see those, but I'm still with the Michael Keaton Batman.
Oh, I love Michael Keaton. I like the Tim Burton, the first one. Not so much the second one, but the first one, because Tim Burton knows how to make weird and deadly serious at the same time. You never saw Batman Mask of the Phantasm?
No.
Okay.
It's a very good one.
Oh, God. It's considered the best cinematic Batman ever made.
It's the best of the animated crop.
Well, no, I mean, it's better than Under the Red Hood. I liked Under the Red Hood. And the reason why I liked Under the Red Hood was because, again, the emotions were real. And there's a lot of powerful emotions in Under the Red Hood. Batman Mask of the Phantasm actually points out why being Batman isn't the best thing for Bruce.
See, I think the reason why I didn't see a lot of these movies, and I know there's a lot of them, is that I had no idea about them. I didn't even know they existed. I don't know where I would have even heard of them.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, TJ, I actually saw Batman Mask of the Phantasm in a theater.
That's pretty awesome.
One of two people in the theater. It was the last. I knew I saw it on a Thursday because I knew it wasn't going to be in the theater the next day. You know. But I'm going to tell you something. The music, the thing, and just there's so many powerful moments in it, and there's a lot of emotional moments in it. So I strongly recommend you immediately. I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix, actually.
Nope.
Actually. Is it? It's not?
I'm not seeing it.
Okay. Well, then rent it or buy it. You won't regret purchasing it, actually. I should get the DVD. All I have is the DVD. Oh, the other Batman cinematic movie I might like almost as much, but it doesn't have as good as... See, the thing is, I can watch Batman Mask of the Phantasm about 1,000 times, right? Batman Beyond Rise of the Joker is sort of like a sequel in some ways, you know? In which you see what happened to the entire Bat family, you know, after the events. I mean, that's the entire point of Batman Beyond. But in Batman Beyond Return of the Joker, it actually gives you a full emotional thing about what happened to the family, to the Bat family. What happened to Tim Drake, what happened to Batgirl, what happened to Harley, what happened to the Joker.
Yeah.
You know,
And
it also has one of the most disturbing scenes in which, and this isn't much of a spoiler, I don't think, in which Joker knows who Batman is. He knows he's Bruce Wayne. And he just presses all sorts of buttons in which he actually drives Batman to a murderous rage.
Right.
And then there's the Joker Jr. scene, which I'm not going to give away, which is just heartbreaking.
Yeah, any of the Bruce Timm, Kevin Conroy, Batman stuff is just great. I mean, I like
John DiMaggio was an interesting Joker. He was a thug Joker.
Yeah. But I love Mask of the Phantasm. I love Return of the Joker. I love Sub-Zero. Sub-Zero was one of the most compelling things I've ever seen with Mr. Freeze.
By the way, you probably already know this, but I don't know if you know this, but the animated adaptation of The Killing Joke will have Conroy and Hamill.
I'm extremely excited about that.
And it'll be rated R. And I don't think it's going to be rated R for violence. I think it's going to be rated R for nudity. Because anybody remembers the comic, obviously Barbara Gordon is naked in it, and so is Jim Gordon. And basically, for those who don't know the plot of the comic, without spoiling anything, it's the Joker is trying to recreate his one bad day.
Yeah.
And it was supposed to be an Elseworlds, you know, imaginary story.
That's where we get a...
Well, Alan Moore asked DC if he could cripple Barbara Gordon, you know, asking him permission, and they said, just kill the bitch. And that's exactly what they said, which was sort of disturbing. And Alan Moore's regretted it ever since. Although I will say, having a handicapped Barbara Gordon she's become a symbol for handicapped people, you know, because she's capable while still in a wheelchair. So there was some good that came out of it. What were you going to say, TJ?
Well, first off, I actually like Barbara Gordon as Oracle more than I like her as a Batgirl, but for all those reasons you just mentioned, for what she represents in both the handicapable part and as a woman character in the comic series. But the other thing I was going to say is Killing Joke the one where we get the Joker's line about he doesn't care about what his past is?
Oh, like no, he says, I prefer to have a multiple choice past.
Is that the one that comes from?
Yes. Yeah, he says, if I'm going to have a past, it might as well be multiple choice.
Right. Cool.
It's also the one in which it ends with Batman and Joker, the Joker telling Batman a joke, and Batman actually laughs. There's one other thing that people don't understand about the Killing Joke, is that Batman kills the Joker at the end. And canonically, of course, he does it because it was never, but he actually kills the Joker at the end. Read the last page. You'll notice that what Batman is doing, he's reaching out and grabbing Joker by the neck, and all you see is the puddle and Joker laughing, and then he stops laughing suddenly. So that's, and that, now Alan Moore refutes that, you know, he says, no, but Grant Morrison says, yes, he kills him there. That was the ultimate joke. That was the Killing Joke. That's where the title comes from. The Killing Joke, because, you know, but I it's sort of like the joke that Joker tells is, you know, there are two psycho ward patients, and they're on top of a building, and they're trying to get to the other another building, but there's a long gap that they'll never be able to cross, you know, jump over. So one of the inmates says, well, I'll tell you what, I'll put on my flashlight, and you can walk across the beam and get to the other side. And the other inmate says, what are you, crazy? You'll just turn the beam off while I'm walking past it. And basically, you know, it's at that one moment in which the Joker is actually sane, and he knows that he'll never be able to be cured, you know, and he knows that Batman in his own way is insane too. That's the two mental patients. It's a sad moment because the Joker knows that he'll never become cured, and that's why the Batman kills him. Now, I'm getting a lot of DC fans angry when I say that Batman kills the Joker in the Killing Joke, but that's exactly what happens, you know. Maybe not because it's canonical, you know, and you can't really have, and we have something called Joker immunity, so.
We anyway, talk that's about the video games.
Yeah, that's the end of the comics podcast, and we're going to move on to video games. Free money suddenly showed up in some people's Steam accounts, and this comes from Kotaku. Last week, a handful of Steam users suddenly found their Steam wallets flush with a small amount of fresh cash. They had no idea why. Given that Steam is no stranger to scams, hacks, and account hijackings, they suspected foul play. Fortunately, it seems like there was nothing to worry about. It began with Steam users receiving somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 gifted to their Steam wallets with no explanation. It came from Valve MasterCard, which some users took to be the official Valve tender, while others raised a skeptical eyebrow. It appeared to be a refund, but if that was the case, why would Valve do it in such a roundabout way? Some users cited a scam they'd heard about that was similar. They held off spending the money, despite the fact that other Steam users should not be able to send Steam wallet funds directly to you. Hours later, however, people began reporting that they'd received the emails from Valve confirming that, yes, Valve was actually pulling the strings on this one. In short, Valve failed to apply a loyalty discount to Steam's Dark Souls 3 plus Steam controller bundle for some eligible users, so they decided to retroactively make up the difference. Pretty cool of them. However, people's initial reaction speaks to general uncertainty surrounding Steam's security protocols, a feeling that's only been bolstered by a lack of timely communication. On the upside, at least Valve explained the situation to people within a day, not days, weeks, or months after this time. It says something about a platform, though, when your first reaction to getting free money is from the platform's creator isn't, rad, free money! It doesn't help that Valve's had multiple high-profile malfunctions and breaches lately.
That's is Valve's like, okay, is their PR department so uncentralized that they don't think to send out an email about something like that days before?
Well, what they should do is actually have it on the Steam account itself. I mean, don't send the email. Put a notice in the person's account that says message from Valve. You know, you get messages, right? And it says, we gave you this money because we didn't give you the discount for the Dark Souls 3 plus Steam controller.
Right. And that's just amazing that you just let that happen without any sort of communication, and or rather the fact that there was obviously communication planned. It just didn't come until after it was already happening. And that's – I don't know.
Yeah, that's pretty poor PR, it seems like. I agree there. They should have been able to get an email out. Just to all the, you know, the games, the people that had purchased that game, that they were going to receive their customer loyalty, you know, discount thing, so that way it wouldn't be like a shock and they wouldn't have to worry about it. And it just seems very strange in this information age that they have such bad communication abilities. I don't understand why they don't have people in charge of that saying like, okay, you know, we got to send this message out. It's just, you know.
Especially for a platform like Valve, where scamming and mm-hmm. malpractice is a definite, they have a history of it. You'd think that that would be a high priority to make sure to let the customer know that, no, this isn't something bad. We just want to make sure you know it's not something bad. It's something good.
The only way that could have happened is if someone hacked your account and was making purchases on your credit card, you know. And there's a very easy way to check to see if any of your credit card have been purchased. All you have to do is change your password just in case. But, you know, in this case, they should have announced the refund first. Yeah. And had people say, when am I getting my refund? Instead of, what? It's better to have people demanding their refund first.
Yeah. I guess you can't make them all happy, but I was figuring that would be better to communicate and be transparent than to not communicate, because when you don't communicate is when bad things happen.
I wonder if it was if you know what happens is that it's faster to send for Valve to send people money than it is for them to send out mass emails.
I guess.
Why? Like I said, it's interesting. You have about the timing, and I wonder. The article didn't say. But if the email came at the same time as the refund, the thing is that some people don't check their email all that often. They just, you know, they go straight to Steam and do whatever on Steam, and, oh, yeah, I'm going to check my email now. So they would have maybe seen the refund, even though they already had the email. They didn't see the email until much later.
Mm, that could happen, yeah. I just, no.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Yeah. Go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. Obviously, there's going to be another Borderlands, says Gearbox, from PC Gamer. Good, if entirely unshocking news, there's going to be another Borderlands. I can't say Borderlands. Borderlands. Okay.
Maybe you're going Gearbox. Tales from the Borderlands.
Gearbox CEO and President Randy Pitchford confirmed as much at the ongoing PAX East, stating in no uncertain terms that it's no secret. Obviously, there's going to be another Borderlands. Nailed it. According to Eurogamer, who attended the PAX East panel, Gearbox will be developing the new game. 2K Australia made the most recent game, the pre-sequel, while Gearbox's Mikey Newman will be writing it. And Battleborn art director Scott Kester will assume the same role for Borderlands 3. If it's even called Borderlands 3, Pitchford added that we don't even know if we're going to call it that. We could call it Borderlands 4 for all we know. May I suggest Borderlands Origins Requiem?
That's a contradiction in terms.
We already knew there was going to be another Borderlands way back in January of last year, but it's good to hear a bit more about it and hear confirmation that it's still in the pipeline. Gearbox is currently more concerned with Battleborn, which is set to release in just over a week.
Yeah, you know, the thing is that, remember, if we remember correctly, Battleborn was like taking about 500 people or something, a massive project. They pulled everybody off their projects to work on Battleborn.
Yeah.
So, I don't call it some, you know, I... Hearing Borderlands the pre-sequel just makes my ears ache.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I enjoyed Borderlands really. I mean, It's one of those games in which you have to refine the right gun before you start actually having any fun. Oh, that rhymes. And also, I was mostly playing solo. I couldn't find anybody on Steam to play with, so I guess that was a problem too.
That's definitely one of those kinds of games, like where it's not as fun if you don't have other people to do it with.
I can say that for many things in life.
Yeah, and I mean, like, well, it's just the fact that the Borderlands, the world in which you're inhabiting in Borderlands 1 and 2, Borderlands 2 had a lot more content in it and had a lot more feedback from characters and NPCs, but the world in Borderlands is just so barren of, like, anything besides things killing you and you shooting it.
Yeah, I mean... You know, Borderlands 2 went more open world than Borderlands, if I remember correctly.
How would you compare the Fallout 4 universe then to that Borderlands?
Oh god, but Fallout 4 is a lot more rich. It's like being in an interstellar southwest for the most part. A lot of rocks, formations, and that's about it. And in the case of Borderlands 2, I think it was, or was it Borderlands pre-sequel? They actually had less gravity. At least there was that. But otherwise, like I said, I hope they make it more interesting. I mean, Borderlands 2 relied entirely on Handsome Jack. Handsome Jack was the guy who kept you from being too bored because he was so... He was the evil Cave Johnson, and Cave Johnson was already evil.
Yeah. And I think that was... Like, if you have a thing like that, or even just like... There was a lot more interaction with NPCs that were, like... There were a lot more settlements in Borderlands 2. In Borderlands 1, you had, like, a couple hubs, and even those hubs that you found in Borderlands 1 were, like...
Borderlands 1, they were really stressing the space western part of it.
Yeah. But, like, even in the settlements that you found in Borderlands 1, like, there was one that had more than two people in it, and the rest of them were just pretty much inhabited by maybe one person and a whole bunch of vending machines.
I forgot Claptrap. Let me ask you a question. Do you enjoy listening to the Claptrap, or do you wish he'd just shut up?
I liked him.
I liked him better in Poker Night, too. So, anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Rumor, Nintendo NX to be officially revealed this or next week. This is from Business, etc. There hasn't been much information from Nintendo about the upcoming NX console, and its codenames don't give much away, give away too much. However, prior to the Wii announcement, Nintendo had codenamed it Revolution. I think that would have been a better name, but anyways, and that's what it was.
You don't want Wii?
Yeah.
You don't like Wii? And
no, I don't. Stop it.
Wii! We did that a lot when the Wii was first announced, yeah, the
I
podcast.
Know. Everybody did, yes, I know.
The Wii, I mean, on this podcast.
It's only a little bit better than Wii U.
Jordan loves to say Wii U.
The Wii is the only console in the last decade to sell over 100 million units, and perhaps the Nintendo is looking at it as inspiration for NX. NeoGAF forums have always been a source of interesting information, which is leaked and hints toward upcoming games or consoles. More recently, information about the NX has made its way into the internet. This time it is quite appetizing, as it hints towards an official announcement of the NX console name. The NeoGAF user, 10 Grand, was quoted on the forum saying, "I believe that the part of the NX NDA being lifted next week allows devs to say they are working on NX titles. The floodgates open April 27th.
By the way, that will be the date that this podcast is airing, so we'll know by then.
Yeah.
When you're listening to this podcast.
This means we can hear more news about NX games or whatever the console will be called. With that being said, 10 Grand also said that the final name of the NX will be dropped next week. He suggested it could be an investors' meeting, as was the case with the Wii.
Okay, watch. They call it the Revolution. That'd be coming for a full circle, I think.
Yeah. I don't know if the pictures I've seen on Facebook have any weight to them, because they show this little tiny controller that looks like a little screen, like two holes in there. So I don't know how.
Well, they did say that the NX controller would be carrying over from the Wii U because people liked having the tablet controller.
Hmm. Okay.
I gotta say, like, I enjoy. Okay, so I enjoy the Wii U gamepad.
Okay.
It's yeah. It makes,
well, especially since you can play the game on your pad and let someone else watch TV.
That, and it just it allows a lot of different functionalities for a lot of different kinds of games. Like,
they really dropped the ball on that one. It could have been so much more interesting using that. There's so many uses they could have used it for, and they just use it as a normal DS second screen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are some things that did it. I liked being able to have the map on my gamepad on a Zelda game while I was doing the dungeon on the screen.
It would have been much more easy for you to have, like, sort of like a variation on the Steel Battalion controller in which your pad suddenly becomes a control panel and you're moving.
I don't know how useful that is, though, because I remember the app that they developed for Fallout 4 where you the Pip-Boy app.
The Pip-Boy app. Well,
didn't really use it, you know. I mean,
well, the problem with that was that, well, the problem is that you're trying to play the game and either you're looking at your wrist or you're looking down, and you don't want to take that, you know. Although I will say I did use the Pip-Boy app a little bit more because I used it for my quest selection. That's the only thing I used it for, was collect quest selection and changing the radio station. That's all I used it for, which is enough actually. Now that I think about it,
you know. I was trying to remember if anyone did this, but it seems like a no-brainer idea, but I don't think anyone ever did it with the Wii U.
Okay.
Like, if you were going to do something with the Wii U, a perfect use of it would have been to, like, make it a game where you need a motion tracker, like, say, Alien Isolation.
And you know,
have the motion tracker on the screen while you have everything else up on the TV.
You know, the game that did the smart glass the best was Dead Rising 3. In which it basically became a cell phone. It turned your cell phone into a cell phone in the game. And that was a pretty cool way, and you got extra missions because of it, and you got information. And it was non-intrusive and immersive. You know, it was immersive without being intrusive, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's a pity that they dropped really smart glass for the last few games. I mean, it could have been much better. You know, I mean, if you want to see how to use a tablet controller as a side controller, they should look at Dead Rising 3 and emulate that, you know. Especially, you know, that, hey, it would have worked. Can you imagine? It would, you know what it would be perfect for? Really perfect? Grand Theft Auto. Because, and remember, in Grand Theft Auto 4, there was a lot of, you had a lot of cell phone, dealings. It would have been a lot better just to have it on your actual cell phone. Have the characters calling you on your cell phone rather than calling you in-game and interrupting the action. Oh, God, in Dead Rising 2. I mean, in the original Dead Rising, you'd pick up the phone and tell Otis to shut the fuck up. Shut up, Otis. I'm fighting zombies here.
Yeah.
Instead, you could just hold the phone in your hand while you're fighting the zombies instead of having to drop everything while the zombies chomp on you. Do us all a favor. Do this Google search for Dead Rising Otis something awful. They have the perfect comic on dealing how frustrating it is to deal with Otis in that game.
Otis was literally the worst part of the first game.
Yeah. Anyways.
I will say, I just remembered there was one that did sort of like something I was talking about. That was Zombie U.
Oh yeah, Zombie U.
They used a lot of different features that were just exclusively on the gamepad, such as being able to, like, go through your inventory, mix and match items, move, equip stuff, and all that.
And people were shocked that the Xbox version did not use it like a smart glass.
Yeah.
It was totally baffling to people. Well, that's the main feature of Zombie U. Why don't you bring it over to the Xbox One and do a smart glass thing with it, you know?
Yeah, but as far as the NX goes, I guess we'll find out next week. I'm looking forward to talking about whatever they reveal.
Same here.
But
well, that leads to our next item. So, rumor, Xbox One upgrade under development at Microsoft, and this comes from Moby Picker. While rumors have been strong regarding the upgraded PlayStation 4, you know, I all of a sudden in my head, I had Darth Vader saying, "The rumors have been strong regarding an upgraded PlayStation 4. The situation has been rather mysterious regarding the possibility of an upgrade to the Xbox One. A new report from The Verge reports that Microsoft is indeed testing a quote-unquote variety of prototype Xbox devices. This falls in line with other reports, such as the one discovered by NeoGraph user Ekim, who found that Microsoft had been testing new devices related to the Xbox. According to The Verge's sources, the prototypes currently being tested at Microsoft use an upgraded components that would be typically used to improve the performance of a gaming PC. In other words, I'm guessing a better graphic card and more RAM and that stuff like that. This points to the new device being more powerful than the current Xbox One, suggesting an upgrade is not unlike the rumored PlayStation 4.5 or PlayStation 4K, whatever you like to call it. Microsoft has been notoriously noncommittal about the possibility of an upgraded Xbox One. Phil Spencer originally hinted piecemeal upgrades for the Xbox One could be a possibility, but then said that Microsoft had nothing of the sort in the cards. He also suggested that the Xbox One and a half was not in his plans, and if the company is to move forward, it will do so with big numbers. If Microsoft is to announce anything, it'll likely be at E3 this year. We're likely going to see the PlayStation 4.5 or 4K, whatever, as well as Nintendo and NX. I'm going to say something about Microsoft when it comes to new hardware. Whenever they say we're not talking about it, it means we're doing it, but we're not.
I think they just don't want to spill the beans on anything yet. Like, it's just too early to commit to that sort of thing. In case that they can't actually do it, they don't want to go back on and say, oh, we were going to, but then we couldn't. But yeah, I know what you mean. This is kind of defeating the purpose of a console, by the way, because the console, the point of it is you don't constantly have to buy new hardware every time.
Well, that's the best part about this, though, Scott, is that you're only buying one upgrade, and the games that you have for your current system are going to work with it, too. And the games that you buy that are for it are going to have a downgraded version for your current console. You know, like I said, forward compatibility is what Microsoft has talked about for a long time. So it's not quite like the new 3DS in which you're going to lose some features, but hopefully they won't be, you know, important features. I will say this, though, you know, E3 was looking like a drag this year, but at least there might be something to liven up, because of all the companies that just pulled out. Activision pulls out, EA pulls out, Ubisoft pulls out, Wargaming.net pulls out, you know, and Nintendo's never there.
Although you just mentioned three gig companies I don't really care much about in the first place.
I care. And the reason why I care is they always have a lot of stuff to show off.
I'll say this about the 4.5, or the PlayStation 4.5 and the Xbox, whatever.
4.5.
It's really pissing a lot of my friends off, just because they don't have PS4s and they've been thinking about getting PS4s because of
No Man's Sky. Now they have to wait? Is that what the problem is?
Particularly because No Man's Sky is coming pretty soon.
Oh.
And,
just get the PC version. And by the way, hold off on No Man's Sky, because that one screams Spore Stink Burger to me.
Well, I mean, that said, I have a lot of friends who, like, they always ask me, I don't know what to do, because is it going to be a new system, or are they going to, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with it, and I wish they would just come out and say, it's either going to be the next thing, or it's just going to be an upgrade of the current thing.
Well, here's the thing, though.
Well, it sounds like an upgrade.
Here's the thing. 4K TVs are starting to flood the market, and there's some really low-cost 4K TVs. I have a 4K TV, and I think the main purpose of this is to have consoles running in 4K. Because I'm pretty sure the NX is, well, it's Nintendo, so I can't make that assumption. But I'm going to assume that Nintendo NX is going to run in 4K. You know, so if you have, you know, I think this is the beginning of the 4K content boom. You know, a lot of cheap 4K TVs coming out, and people are going to start buying them.
What's your definition of cheap? Because I'm seeing $500 and $600.
$499 for a 50-inch 4K TV from Samsung.
That doesn't feel like cheap.
$499 for a TV doesn't seem like cheap.
That's
if it's a cutting edge TV, that is actually pretty a good price, as opposed to, like, I don't know if you remember from like the 2000s when.
Yeah, we're not talking about the $3,000 UHD TVs with the curved screens. We're not talking about that.
Right.
You know, the monitors are still 4K monitors are still hella expensive, but yeah, I mean. The thing about these 4K, these cheap 4K TVs, they're basically gigantic tablets in 4K. Which, still, they're still TVs, but it just makes me chuckle a little bit, because, you know, the terminology for televisions used to be CRTs, cathode ray tubes, and then LCD TVs and all that. Now we're just going to buy gigantic tablets. And, you know, I keep on thinking, what, are we going to start playing iPad games or iOS or Android games on our TV? You better have some really good upscaling for those Android games.
I just wonder if I can hook my computer up to it. Oh, yeah, it
does. Oh, definitely. I mean, it's 4K. I mean, I could hook up my if I wanted to, I could hook up my keyboard to my 4K TV and surf the web on an Explorer. You know, it has all the software on it. It's a smart TV. So yeah, I could use my TV as sort of a smart TV. You know, web browser, YouTube thing, and all that stuff. Matter of fact, for some videos on you know, like Atop the Fourth Wall, I'll watch it on TV rather than watching it on my computer screen.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, but that's the entire thing I think is driving all of this is 4K, and Microsoft does not want their console to be the non-4K console. It isn't. It makes it sound though like it'll come a year after the PlayStation 4.5 or something like that. Like they're not going to have it on the same, unless they just say screw it. We're just going to put some more RAM in it. Better processor, same processor, more RAM, more graphic, better graphic card of the same type. You know, it's they might do that. And I'm going to tell you something. If there is an Xbox One and a Half, I'll probably buy it. If only because I want to be able to watch my video straight through as 4K, because I have a 4K TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know. I think these new consoles are going to be relatively inexpensive. I'm willing to bet you that they'll be $350 with the regular versions, the going down to $250. And then your friends can decide, do I want the $250 or the $350?
Yeah.
So you were about to say?
Who?
You,
me?
TJ, you sounded like you were going to jump in on something.
Oh, no, not this time. I was looking at the question of the week.
How about you, Scott?
Well, I guess we can move to question of the week.
Are you going to see? Captain America: Civil War or the weekend next?
I think we'll try to see the weekend of.
Yeah, I used to do that. I no longer have this need to see the movie on the first day. Although I can imagine you might want to in your case, Scott, because you hate spoilers and you don't want to be sitting around
for a
week. I do
hate spoilers, but I think it's mostly because we can.
You don't want to be sitting around trying to ignore people talking about it around the water cooler the next day.
Yeah, I'm trying to avoid details. I'm already annoyed that they seem to have this concept that they need to show every little tiny
thing. Why did they show Spider-Man in the trailer?
I would love Spider-Man to have been a complete surprise. I would have loved to have not even known he was going to show up, because I would like to have that. Oh my gosh!
Well,
I'm not going to have that now.
If you're thinking about Civil War, though, I think there are a lot of other characters that might show up. So I wonder if they showed Spider-Man because there's going to be other surprising characters going to appear in it. Because this is Civil War. I mean, you're going to have the entire friggin' Marvel Universe in it.
I had a similar problem with Avengers Age of Ultron when they showed the Hulkbuster armor.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
When they just straight up showed that in the trailer, it's like, you know what would have been really, 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 really awesome is if I had never known that the Hulkbuster was going to be in that movie, and then I went into the movie and saw Iron Man jump into a giant six-ton suit of armor to fight the freaking Incredible Hulk.
Oh, shit, I just realized, you know, maybe they showed Spider-Man because they want to hide the fact that Deadpool's in Civil War.
Maybe.
Watch my prediction become true and you'll accuse me of giving away a spoiler.
Let's see. I agree there, because it's like,
She-Hulk?
The new Terminator movie came out, they showed John Connor being a robot, and it's like, this should not have been the trailer. This should have been a twist.
The problem is that the twist was stupid, and, you know, in Terminator Genesis, after they kill the T-1000, it just goes off the rails and becomes boring. I was enjoying the alternative history part from that until the T-1000 gets killed. That was fun. The rest of it was, who cares? And who gives a shit? Skynet as an app, as an iOS app, as an operating system, that's not going to give them control of the nuclear weapons. How does that work? How is making the, and also Is it like Microsoft is going to announce Windows 11 and everybody's going to use it, including Apple's and iOS pads and all that stuff? And Android phones are going to say, oh, we're going to use Windows 11 instead.
It's the same thing with Independence Day 4 where, you know, oh, you just download this virus and of course it'll mess up the aliens.
On a Mac. Yes, Macs and aliens are compatible. Of course, you know, you have Independence Day 2 coming out. It's not called Independence Day 2. It's called something else. Independence Day something something. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, just give it up. You know, I just want Roland Emmerich to stop making movies. Please stop.
I think the most likely scenario of them ever making a good Terminator movie again is if they end up, like, going ahead and... If Hollywood decides to go ahead and, like, do the mashup that everyone's always loved, and that's Terminator versus RoboCop.
You know, my favorite Terminator sequel is actually Terminator Salvation.
I
prefer that one a lot more. Well, Terminator 2 is boring. I mean...
Oh,
I hate to say this, but you know, I saw it in theaters. It was okay. You know, Terminator 3 is just a remake of Terminator 2. Terminator Salvation was actually something that is actually a story about something different. A, it's after the end. The entire movie is after the end. Fuck the present. We're just going to deal with after the end. And the question of what makes a person and loyalty and all that stuff, all those things were actually very interesting to me. And there's a lot of heartbreaking moments in it. And I'm not going to get into a Terminator Salvation review. I'm just going to say it was my favorite of the sequels.
Okay.
But you get what makes a person in Terminator 2, with Arnold Schwarzenegger trying to force a smile for Edward Furlong.
And hasta la vida, baby. Come on.
Well, I mean, you know, you could have a Terminator versus RoboCop movie. That would be fine. And just, you know.
With the fact that they've actually done a reboot of the RoboCop series and they're still doing Terminator movies, I think it's the only
possibility. No, just do the classic of both of them. Although, the problem is Arnold Schwarzenegger. There's just so much you can do with CGI.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is the question of the week. Would you buy an updated console like the PlayStation 4.5 or the Xbox One and a half? Go ahead, Scott. We know your answer.
Yeah, I probably will be saving up to get the 4.5 since I don't have a 4.
That's right. So you actually lucked out not getting the PlayStation 4.
Yeah, apparently.
Absolutely. You know. How about you, TJ?
Maybe for the Xbox One and a half, but as far either way, I'm going to be. I'm probably not going to be in the first wave of it. I'm just going to sit back and see how things go, see what people think of it, how it's running on the 4K stuff. And then after the reviews come in, I'll probably get a look at it again and see about buying it.
I'll probably immediately pre-order the Xbox One and a half because I have a 4K TV and I want to make full use of it. You know, because if it has 4K, great. You know, and I'll start playing 4K games. And here's the thing is upscaling works really well. So, anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast, the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter. He is at Johnny Chugs on Twitter. Scott, I mean. And, TJ. Scott is at Alpha Shard, although he seldom ever uses his Twitter account, so don't bother. So, yeah. So, maybe we'll have an entire discussion about Captain America Civil War for an outtakes thing. That actually might work, if we just discuss a single movie. Sort of like Red Letter Media.
Uh-huh. That'd be cool, yeah. Bag.
So, I will probably see it sometime in the mid-afternoon, like one of those people who goes at 11 a.m. to the theater to watch a movie in the middle of the week.
I'll tell you, Monday noon is a perfect time to watch a movie.
And the thing is, I don't give a shit about spoilers. As a matter of fact, you know, the funny thing is, I thought I was spoiled for Star Trek Nemesis, because I thought it was Will Riker who was going to die. So that entire fight with the Viceroy was actually exciting to me because I was waiting for him to kill Riker. And it made perfect sense to me, by the way, that Riker would get killed because he's getting married. What happens to the newlywed in action movies? Oh, gets killed. It's like saying you're 3 days from retirement. Getting married is a death sentence in an action movie. And if you're married in the beginning. Just ask Felix Leiter. No one remembers License to Kill. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyways, we will see you next week.
All right.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Catch you later.